there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 377. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter, the handle is thisshowissogay, and of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. It is such a crazy world out there these days, folks, so I have decided that for this week's episode, we need to pause, we need some positivity, we need some light, we need some gratitude, we need some love, and thus I bring to you this week's guest. Shannon Algio is a spiritual life coach, an international yoga instructor, and the host on the Soul Feed podcast. He has been named one of the nicest instructors in New York City by Rate Your Burn, and he has been featured on Elephant Journal, The Advocate, and the Consciously Speaking podcast. Shannon is certified in a ton of different yoga methods, so many of which I'm not sure I can pronounce, and he studied yoga leadership with the nonprofit Off the Mat Into the World at the prestigious Omega Institute. Right this second, he is right where he needs to be, which is with us. Shannon, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you, Ken. Wow, what an introduction. I'm so grateful to be here, and it's really cool to be reconnecting with you, and thank you for having me.
So no pressure, but I am counting on you to bring to us happiness and light and positivity. I feel like this is in your wheelhouse.
Well, I'll do my best. I think that happiness, light, and positivity is a personal inside job. So I just invite everyone to be open to choosing that for yourself, because I can't fully do it for you. But I'm down.
All right.
Yeah, let's do it.
In my head, you were going around and just flipping a switch in people. But now I feel like you're already saying that we have to do some of the work ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. People come to me and I think they're often very disappointed.
By the way, I would not use that in any of your promotional materials, the fact that people come disappointed. All right.
Yeah. Well, at first I think it's like I think this work isn't easy is kind of the thing that I mean by that is it's like, it requires that we look in the mirror, which isn't always comfortable. And then we can, you know, see what's not making me happy. And then if I'm willing to face that, I usually feel a lot happier.
Nice. Nice. Well, let me catch our listeners up to where you and I met. We met years and years ago. It was like 7 or 8 years ago at this point on AIDS Life Cycle, the wonderful San Francisco to LA ride. And we should give a shout out, because we like giving a shout out to names that people don't know. How great is that, Becca Lynch?
Oh my gosh. Oh, I was just with Becca in Paris.
Of course.
She text messaged me. She was like, "Do you want to stay with me when you're in Paris?" Because I was leading a retreat in France in September. And I was like, of course my high school best friend is in Paris and living there. And so anyway, I just saw her and it was like a magical adventure. Love Becca Lynch. Shout out to Becca Lynch right now.
For listeners who don't know, they're like, why are we talking about someone that they don't know? She's doing incredible work to change the world through theater, which I adore. It's such great work, community-based theater. So when I first met you, I would say, and you tell me if I'm wrong, you had not figured out your path. You were kind of on that journey of, where am I going to go in this world? Talk to our listeners about that journey to arrive where you currently are as a spiritual life coach, yoga instructor, all these different pieces.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for that question. I grew up outside of DC in Maryland. And when I was 11, my mom threw me into dance classes and voice lessons. And I started doing shows and every show I did was So Gay, by the way.
Yay.
And so, yeah, it was just kind of like my trajectory from the time I was 11. I loved the musical theater community. I loved performing. I would do like so many shows every year. And so naturally, when it was time to decide where to go to college, I was doing musical theater. It wasn't a question. I was auditioning at all the best schools. And I was very ambitious to pursue that path of moving to New York and getting on Broadway. And when I got to Syracuse University, which is where I ended up ended up getting into and choosing to go to, I got there and I made amazing friends. And it just was kind of like this experience of hard work. And over the course of my time at Syracuse, I really lost my joy for performing. And I was really, really confident by the time that I graduated that I didn't want to pursue it as a career, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to pursue it professionally. And it was really scary because my identity was so wrapped up in theater, and the expectations from everybody who I went to school with, to my parents who invested in my education, expectations from everyone who had known me since the time I was 11, was, you know, Shannon's going to move to New York and he's going to be on Broadway and he's going to go for it. And so it was very, very difficult for me to change course. And yet I really felt like I didn't have a choice. I felt like if I was going to listen to myself and listen to my spirit and listen to where I was being called, I had to acknowledge that I didn't want to do that. And so I fell into yoga class. My friend dragged me there to St. Mark's Yoga to the People in New York City, down in the East Village. And I took my first yoga class. And what I realized was I had this like aha moment after years and years of intense dance classes and trying to have the perfect turnout, the perfect feet, the perfect presentation, the fiercest voice, all this stuff. I had this realization when I was on the yoga mat that nobody was really watching me, and I could close my eyes and I could just breathe and move for me. And I didn't have to do anything for approval or validation. And that was a real turning point for me, was when I started to practice yoga. And it really was my yoga practice that has been the through line to get me to where I am now, which is doing this work as a life and career coach and teaching yoga and leading yoga retreats and speaking. But yeah, it really started with me landing on the yoga mat.
I think that sometimes those of us in the LGBTQ community, not always so great at focusing on that internal practice of we are going to do this for us, because that spotlight is often on us, not just the theatrical spotlight, you know, but the spotlight of fighting for equality and all the different struggles that so many of us have encountered. I think that that's a big moment, that would be tough for many of us, certainly for me, to be in that moment and have the breathing be just for me.
Yeah. And there's, I think a lot of times I remember when I came out as gay, I like felt so good that I had a name for what it was that I was experiencing. And I really leaned into that label, like gay, Shannon, I'm Shannon and I'm gay. And it felt really empowering to come out in high school. And it felt really empowering to say, I'm doing musical theater and that's what I'm doing and nobody can ask me any questions about it. And what I'm realizing is that it's sort of this, like, I'm wanting certainty. I'm wanting to know the outcome, and I can sort of get wrapped up in these identities. And so I think it's actually really freeing, even though it's scary, to allow ourselves to question these labels that we put on ourselves and these commitments that we make. And I think it's kind of nice to kind of re-come out every once in a while. Like maybe you're actually bi, or maybe you are not into musical theater anymore, and just kind of give yourself the space to change. And you don't have to do what you always said you wanted to do in the past.
Yeah. On behalf of the Yoga Tourism Board, sell our listeners on the practice of yoga. You know, I have taken my Bikram classes, which I consider to be fake yoga, because it's just, you go through the motions. And by the way, I've heard from yoga instructors that they consider it to be fake too, so whatever. But I just can't seem to take that step into a yoga class, because everyone keeps telling me, well, you do it in the way that you do it. And my brain, I feel like, is not wired that way. I feel like there has to be a right way of doing it.
Yeah. And that's, so at this point, really, like, yoga is like food. It's like, well, what kind of food is it? Mexican food? Are you going out for Japanese food? Or, like, there are so many different styles of yoga. So if you might have taken, if you're listening, you might have taken a yoga class and you might have, like, hated it. And that might have been the style or the teacher or just sort of where you were at on that day and your body and your mental state, or maybe a combination of all three. So I think, like, the most important thing to know when you're wanting to discover, like, what is yoga, is to try different styles, modalities, teachers, studios, and give yourself the space to dislike yoga for a while, because I think you inevitably will. Because the practice of yoga brings up discomfort. It brings up the truth. It brings up how we actually really feel. And sometimes it causes us to feel sensations in the body that have been suppressed or ignored or numbed. And so I'm doing a really good job at selling yoga right now, aren't I?
It's pretty good.
And so if we have the courage to be with our discomfort, the researcher Brené Brown, researcher and author, she says we can't selectively numb. That's what she's found in our research. If we try and numb the negative emotions, we also numb the positive and the joy. And so what's been really beneficial to me about the yoga practice is it's given me the space, the container, the courage, and the bandwidth to experience my own human discomfort and to release some of the tension that I'm holding on to through my body and through my breath. And then because of that practice, I actually am allowed to show up in my life and experience the joy. It's because I actually go and I take time to experience the tough, I don't know if I can cuss on this podcast, but S-H-I-T.
There you go. There you go. Well, you know, on your website, there's this phrase that I just adore, that you are supporting people to get to that place where they can serve the world from a place of unconditional love. What does that look like, Shannon? Or maybe what does that feel like? What should I? Maybe that's my problem. I need to actually physically see things.
Yeah. And I think these conversations are so good to sort of open up minds and change our perceptions about things. But really where the magic happens, if you will, or the transformation or the shift, is in the embodiment of it. When you feel it yourself, then you don't need me to talk about it anymore, because you know. So I think that's a good point, is like, how can we feel it? So I help people try and I help people serve the world from a place of unconditional love. And I think what that looks like practically is I believe in energy, and there's actually like research behind energy, and that we actually have an energetic field around us, and the heat from my body, that 98.6 degrees, is actually lifting off of my body, and people can feel your energy. You can feel someone's energy. You can know if someone walks in the room and they're in a really bad mood or they've got anger. You can feel it. You can see it. And so I think that we transmit energy to one another. And so if we're going to serve the world, I could serve the world and have really good intentions, but if I'm an asshole all the time, then I'm not, am I actually serving the world? Am I creating more love? Am I creating more peace? Probably not. But if I'm taking the time through a yoga practice, a meditation practice, a run, a spin class, whatever, to get my body and my energy to be in a state of peace, of love, of connection, of groundedness, of ease, then that's my energy. I've got peaceful, loving energy. And if I'm able to really hold that and embody that and share it with people in my work, in my conversations, through my voice, then what are they going to pick up from me? They're going to be like, wow, he's a loving dude. He's a cool guy. Like, I feel good around him. So a lot of the work that I do with people is looking at not necessarily what they're doing, but how they're doing it and why they're doing it, sort of the deeper layer that's underneath the surface.
There's no one who's listening to your words who's not thinking, yes, I want to get there. What are some of the common barriers that you encounter with people with whom you work on what's preventing them from getting there?
Mm. I think the number one barrier that I go through myself, because like I do not have all this figured out. I'm just always practicing figuring it out because I know it's possible. And so the number one barrier that gets in the way for me and for so many people who I know and who I work with is that we forget. We forget what we're capable of. We forget how powerful we really are to control our state. I mean, if you could talk to me on a day that I practice yoga for 60 to 75 minutes in the morning or even 15 minutes and ask me the difference between that day that I did that and the next day when I didn't, it's really like it's different. So I think so we have the ability to make choices in our lives that affect our state. Everything is choice and consequence. And there's results to our actions. In yoga, they call it karma. In the world, we call it karma. It's pretty a well-known word now. So it's like if you remember that you're powerful and you can affect your own energy, then it's like, then there's a chance. Then there's a chance. So I think the first thing that gets in the way is we forget how powerful we are and we don't believe in our ability to really, really have a say in how we show up. I think the other thing that gets in the way is limited beliefs from the past. It's just like this idea that it is the way it is. It's like this cynicism that's kind of insidious in our culture. And that cynicism, that belief that everything just is the way it is and it's not changing and it just kind of sucks, becomes this depression that works into our bodies and our belief system. And then we start to not see the light when we're in that place. So I think it's like that's a big one for a lot of people, is they just don't even realize that their limiting belief is actually holding them back from really going after what it is they want and creating the life that they deserve.
I'm starting to get from all this that we have to put in the work ourselves. I still like the idea where we carry you around with us and you do it for us, but I'm starting to feel like maybe that's not the way it works.
Oh my God, I love it. Yeah, well, here's the thing is like, that's why we have teachers. I mean, the truth is that some people will hear this podcast or hear this show and be like, wow, like that resonates with me. I like the way this guy, I like the way Ken and Shannon are articulating these ideas and working through these concepts. And so there's so many teachers out there of all different spiritual traditions, religions, or just philosophies and coaching practices, from Tony Robbins to Jordan Bach and Gabrielle Bernstein, Marianne Williamson. There's so many people articulating this sort of work of personal evolution. And if someone resonates with you, if you're open to really hearing someone's message, then they can help you. But you, they can never do it for you, unfortunately.
All right. I somewhat accept that. I'm not totally there. Again, listeners, we are here with Shannon Algio, spiritual life coach, yoga instructor, the host of the Soul Feed podcast. You have interviewed some pretty darn cool people, but before we talk about some of the specific interviews, I've heard you interview people. You can't fake your appreciation. And that's something that people really try to fake. And that's something that if they listen to you interviewing people, it is very clear that you are appreciative to be sharing energy with the people you are interviewing. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's, when we first started doing Soulfeed podcast, it became very clear very early on how lucky we were to get to sit down with people who we deeply respect and admire and look up to, and to be able to ask them whatever we want to ask them and to have them really vibe with us. And it's so, yes, I'm so grateful for everyone who's come on the podcast and has just been willing to have a conversation. And then the thing I love about the world that we live in now is we get to share these conversations with people. And I think that's really awesome. Like, that's cool, right?
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. Talk to me about one of those interviews where you walked away saying, wow, that definitely just happened.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think Deepak, our interview with Deepak Chopra was a big one. So many I've walked away feeling that way that you just described. But when we interviewed Deepak, we actually went to his office in New York City downtown. And so we got to interview him live from his office, which was really cool because he's very present, very, very, very present. Like his way of being really teaches you and reminds you what presence is. And I mean, when he looks into your eyes, you really are like, wow, this man is really like with you in this space. And so I was just on such a giddy high because I've known about Deepak practically my whole life. And it just felt so exciting to sit down with him and to have him really transmit his message of who we really are and what consciousness is. And I mean, I felt so high after that interview. I was like, I don't know. I think I'm floating above Manhattan right now, but that was a really cool one.
So cool. So cool. And by the way, Marianne Williamson doesn't get much better than that.
Oh man, she's a firecracker.
Yeah.
Every time I talk to her, she like lights me up. I'm like, yes, like, let's do this.
Well, you just mentioned Manhattan. You have made the move from the snarky land of New York City. I'm just calling it that because, you know, that's where I'm from, over to L.A. Does that change the way that you approach your practice?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it changes everything. It's like, it's sort of why I moved here, because I knew that it was going to change something in me. And for me, it was about letting go of one of the greatest things about New York and one of the hardest things about New York, which is this like deeply ingrained hustle. Yeah. I mean, I that's what I love about New York. Everyone is there and they're working their asses off and they're there for a purpose. There's such intentionality. There's such energy. There's such movement. And I was, you know, I was craving a slowing down, like a slower pace, more space for thoughts and to write more and to just sort of look at my life in a new, through a new lens. And so, yeah, it's changing the way that I'm setting up my day. It's changing the way I'm setting up my business. It's changing the way I'm thinking about my time. It's been a huge gift because I lived my whole adult life in New York City so far. So I just needed this shift. I haven't been able to articulate really why I needed this shift, but I just knew that I needed it.
So great. So great.
Yeah.
And you're going to be encountering different clients out there in LA than you will encounter in New York.
Yes. Yes. I mean, the people in New York that I got to work with while I was there, I was just like, have, you know, grew to become long-term friends of mine. And I mean, come on, the people in New York are amazing, but I'm meeting different people in LA and a huge part of my coaching practice is online. So I work with people in different states and different countries. So I've been doing a lot of my work from home and trying to get out and meet the LA community as well, because there's a lot of people doing some really cool stuff out here.
Oh, this is good stuff. Let me ask you a question that I know many of our listeners have on their minds, and you give it a shout out both on YouTube and on your website. Shannon, definitively, how do we magnetically attract the right partner?
How do you magnetically attract the right partner? Well, look at your life right now. Look at your day, look at your life, and what is sucking your energy? Because you're not going to magnetically attract the right partner if you are not satisfied with your energy. And I don't mean your six-pack. I don't mean how you look or any of that like superficial stuff. I mean, how do you feel in your body? How do you feel about yourself? And what in your life is sucking your energy? So for me, around the time that I created that video, what was sucking my energy was dating apps. I was so on Tinder and Grindr, and I wasn't on Scruff, but that's another one now. And Hinge, and And I was losing so much energy seeking. I was seeking. I was desperate energetically. And as soon as I deleted all of them, and I said this mantra to myself, and I encourage you, if you're struggling with attracting a partner and you want to, say this to yourself. Everyone in my life right now is who I need in my life right now. I don't need anyone else. I just need the people who are here. Everyone in my life right now is who I need in my life right now. And when I like really said that with conviction and like committed to that, it was my commitment to believe that I don't need anyone else in my life. I just need to be tending to my garden, the people that are here right now. Then I met my boyfriend.
There it is. That's how it works.
And we're celebrating 2 years in a week.
Such good stuff. All right, last question for you, sir. This word is, I think, probably in 8 years of doing this show and 377 episodes, if we had to boil it down to one word, it would be authenticity. That it's so important that people put their voices out there, but in an authentic way. And so much of your work, and I've been following you for years, you know, so much of your work is based in the importance of authenticity. Talk to our listeners about the importance of authenticity.
It's everything, because we always know when we're telling the truth or not. Like, I always know if I'm bullshitting, even if it feels good to bullshit because it makes me feel better in the moment, it has a bad effect on my sense of pride and my sense of integrity. And so I think an authenticity is a willingness to look bad for the moment so that you can feel good in your life. You can feel good about who you are. And authenticity is not about looking good. And you got to make a choice. Do you want to look good or do you want to be authentic? And I mean, I'm sure I choose looking good all the time. I'm like not necessarily good at this always. But I generally try and make the choice to be real, even if it's tough, even if it creates a little bit of discord in my relationship or doesn't make me as much money. Like I try to come back to the practice of this is what feels right. This is what I know is right. This is what I'm going to choose because it feels like it's me. And when I do that, then things really start to spin around me because people can feel that I'm authentic. When you know that you're bullshit, people feel like you're a bullshit. Yeah. It's like, it just kind of works that way.
That's the way it works. Well, what is coming up for you that you are excited about, that you want to tell our listeners about?
Oh my gosh. Well, right now, my business and podcast partner, Alex Kipp, and I were working on Soulfeed TV. And so, you know, we started off with Soulfeed Podcast, and that's going and continuing, and we're loving that platform. And it's our vision to create a video platform where Alex and I can create series, but not just us. We can actually share the platform for other teachers and people who are, you know, teaching yoga, teaching meditation, who are experts in whatever field they're in, and we're working on Soulfeed TV. So we're just at the beginning phases now. We're beginning to film in November, and I'm really excited because it feels abundant. It feels like a platform where I can create and where we can also invite other people to create as well. So I'm pretty excited about that. I'm also learning a lot about essential oils recently, which is sort of like a new hobby of mine.
I like the mint ones. Can you send me some of the mint ones?
Ooh, it's spearmint, peppermint.
I see now that there's a difference, and I have no idea. Let's go with spearmint.
Ooh, okay.
This is good. This is good. All right, listeners, this is what you guys need to do, and you need to do it straight away. Stroll on over to shannonalgeo.com, shannonalgeo.com. We will link to it for you. You, of course, must go on over to iTunes. You must subscribe to the Soulfeed podcast. Here's the deal with you, Shannon. You are just pure light inspiration, where you are putting forth energy into the world that people can latch onto and say, no, wait a second, I can do that, right? I can latch onto that. I can be more positive. I can move forward to that next step. And that's a different type of inspirational that is so important. You're like this check-in that lifts people up, and it's so much more authentic and so much more accessible than a lot of what other people put out there. And I hope you know how much it's appreciated out there in the world.
Thank you, Ken. And I just want to receive that and say thank you. And I also just want to say you're amazing, and thank you for all, like, nearly 400 of these episodes and for the work you're doing with the show. You are a light too, my friend. So thank you for holding the space.
I love it. And just to confirm again, we have to put in the work and you're not doing it for us.
Yes.
Okay.
You have to put in the work. I'm not doing it for you, but if you want help, if you go to the coaching page on my website, you can sign up for a free session and we can talk.
There it is.
Start with a talk.
There it is. ShannonAlgio.com. Shannon, please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. You too, Ken.
Some dreams live on in time forever. Those dreams.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to get to all of the latest LGBTQ news out there. I hate the idea of covering anything negative. I don't want to cover anything negative on this, our happiness and light and positivity episode, but that was the first half of the show with Shannon Algio. Now we're in the second half of the show where we have to cover the news. And sadly, my friends, the news, not all positivity, not all light. Let's start off by talking about HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, not Hillary Rodham Clinton, but the Human Rights Campaign. So I want to be very upfront. I am never trying to misportray who it is that I am and the belief system that I hold. I am who I am. There is a bias to this show. I know that. If you are listening to this show and you then send me an email and say, you're biased, you're liberal, totally, absolutely, I own that, 100%, it's my show, it's what I put out there, this is who I am, this is what I do. I do try to represent things from the other side, particularly things I don't agree with, but I certainly have my own bias. And my bias, by the way, does not exclude LGBT organizations. I do have very strong opinions about some of our national LGBT organizations. We've had some amazing guests on in the past who have talked about the importance of grassroots work. And I'm a huge fan of grassroots work, right? Like, I'm a huge fan of things coming from the bottom up, but also as someone who has worked in government, albeit local government, shout out Brattleboro, Vermont, in my time there as a selectman. Although I see the power that is inherent in top-down strategies, I love the idea of strategies and energy that come from the bottom and permeate our culture and really create change in that way. And so in that way, I have been not a great supporter of the Human Rights Campaign. When I was first coming out and all I knew about what was happening on the scene was the Human Rights Campaign, I was a huge supporter. And let me be very clear, what the Human Rights Campaign has done for the LGBT community is huge. They have done immeasurable good. I think without question the Human Rights Campaign has saved lives, and I don't say that lightly. Not at all. I think the Human Rights Campaign has saved lives. But I also think that they do deserve that microscope of criticism because I think they do problematic things. Some people call them the Human Rights Champagne, which I had never heard before, just because they do all of these galas. And often what you see most often are these galas. And that's unfair too, because so much of the behind the scenes work we're not seeing. So I get all of that. I think they are an organization that does great good. But I've also been very critical of them. when the Democratic primary was starting. And by the way, this is not me saying I was a Bernie Sanders supporter. Not at all. I just was of the opinion and expressed it in the Huffington Post that it was really premature for the Human Rights Campaign to endorse Hillary Clinton before the Democratic primaries had even started. Before a single vote was cast, they declared their support for Hillary Clinton. And in that support, it was just so one-sided that it didn't mention all of the obvious aspects to that endorsement. That even if they didn't color the way that endorsement went, they still should have been acknowledged. Like one, that the executive director of the Human Rights Campaign, the president of the Human Rights Campaign, Chad Griffin, used to work for the Clintons. Let's mention that. You can still endorse her, but let's mention that. Full transparency. Let's put that out there, okay? Let's also, you know, put out there that there is another candidate. I get that that's not the way endorsements work. You don't endorse someone and say, by the way, there's somebody else. But when we are in a situation where there are two extraordinarily pro-LGBT candidates, as there were in the Democratic primary, give a shout out and say, look, we are choosing to endorse Hillary Clinton, but there is this other candidate out there, Bernie Sanders, who also has this incredible, incredible record. And just doesn't make any sense to not mention that at all. In the same way that we would mention, and we should support her over this horrible candidate, perhaps on the Republican side, we should also mention, what a great embarrassment of riches we find here. We're choosing to support this candidate, but there's also this other candidate who we, by our own metrics, have rated, Human Rights Campaign, have their metrics for being LGBTQ friendly, and they rated Bernie Sanders higher than Hillary Clinton. So I just think those things should be acknowledged. But if we put all that aside, and I know they lost a ton of support for supporting Hillary Clinton, and okay, that kind of is what it is. But where it is unforgivable is when the Human Rights Campaign decided to back Senator Kirk instead of Representative Duckworth for the Senate position there in the great state of Illinois. So to catch you up, Mark Kirk, who is the Republican incumbent, right, and he's a moderate of sorts, the Human Rights Campaign decided to endorse him over Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth to represent Illinois in the Senate. It was the most bizarre thing because, great, Mark Kirk, Senator Kirk, has done things for the LGBT community. By the way, he's also espoused some views that have not been so helpful to the LGBT community. But okay, he's moderate. But on the other side, you have Tammy Duckworth, who, again, by the Human Rights Campaign's own metrics, this isn't Ken Schneck's metrics. These aren't Nate Silver's metrics. These are the Human Rights Campaign's own metrics for determining favorability among candidates by their support of the LGBTQ community. And by their own metrics, Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth annihilates incumbent Senator Mark Kirk. So when the Human Rights Campaign decided to endorse Mark Kirk, what the heck? How does that make sense at all? And Chad Griffin put out just the most bizarre justification that was, yes, we can't alienate our Republican allies. Of course not. And if the campaign is between a moderate Republican and a far-right Republican who's trying to take away our rights, yes, let's endorse the moderate. But this was a moderate Republican versus Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth, who is incredible, a huge supporter of the LGBT population. Well, months and months and months and months later, the Human Rights Campaign has now dropped their endorsement of Mark Kirk. It's a little bit maybe a case of too little, too late. What happened was the Congresswoman, Tammy Duckworth, and Senator Kirk were in the thralls of a debate last week when Tammy Duckworth, an Iraq war veteran who sustained major, major injuries during her service, she referenced her family and their service to the country. She said this quote, "My family has served this nation in uniform going back to the revolution. I'm a daughter of the American Revolution. I've bled for this nation. But I still want to be there in the Senate when the drums of war sound. Families like mine are the ones that bleed first, but let's make sure the American people understand what we are engaging in, and let's hold our allies accountable because we can't do it all." Well, Senator Kirk then responded quite snidely by bringing up Tammy Duckworth's ethnicity, saying this quote, "I had forgotten that your parents came all the way from Thailand to serve George Washington." Now, Senator Kirk then backtracked and he tweeted an apology the next day. He said this, quote, "Sincere apologies to an American hero, Tammy Duckworth, and gratitude for her family's service." Well, that apology did not go far enough. According to a statement released by the Human Rights Campaign, they said this, quote, "Attacking someone because of her race and ethnicity is inexcusable for anyone, but especially for a United States senator." This is what HRC President Chad Griffin wrote in an open letter. He went on to say this, quote, "The diversity of our movement is our greatest strength, and Senator Kirk's remarks were an affront to our most fundamental values. We have therefore voted to endorse Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth, who has been a strong LGBTQ ally in the House of Representatives, and HRC will contribute the maximum amount to her campaign. We look forward to working with her in the Senate to secure full federal equality for all LGBTQ Americans." So that was the Human Rights Campaign rescinding their endorsement of Senator Kirk, endorsing Tammy Duckworth. Many would say, okay, perhaps a little bit too late. Again, in March when they endorsed him, Senator Kirk, he scored a 78 on HRC's congressional scorecard, while Tammy Duckworth scored a 100. Okay, the endorsement made no sense to begin with. And then, yes, they did reverse. But, you know, it's a week before the election. It would have been helpful had this been earlier. In other huge news, I know I could just talk about the Human Rights Campaign the whole time, but we've got to move on to other major, major news. The U.S. Supreme Court, they will hear a potentially landmark case in which a student has sued his school district for enforcing a bathroom ban policy. Virginia School District challenged the Obama administration guidelines that require schools to allow transgender students to use the bathroom that they identify with rather than what matches their birth gender. Gavin Grimm, a senior at a high school in this one Virginia school district, is being backed by the ACLU in a bid to sue. 17-year-old Grimm initially lost the case at the district court, but the Court of Appeals later ruled in his favor. The student's case raises the challenge that the policy violates Title IX of the Education Amendments 1972. The title has been interpreted by the Obama administration as a ban on anti-transgender discrimination. Grimm's attorney said it was disappointing that the court would allow the policy to remain while Grimm is finishing his time in the school district. ACLU attorney Joshua Block said this, quote, "These sorts of discriminatory policies stigmatize and isolate transgender students like Gavin just because of who they are. We look forward to presenting Gavin's case to the Supreme Court as the next step in the fight to ensure fairness and equality for trans people across the country." The justices announced that they would hear the case late last week, and it is likely to be heard in April, with a final decision being announced in June. The U.S. Supreme Court in the summer ruled that the school could temporarily block the trans student from using male bathroom facilities during the legal battle. The ruling on the case could have a major impact on bias against the transgender community. This will be a huge case. We will see if Title IX holds up in this way. We will certainly cover it. In some bizarre Republican news, this should be a segment every week, a Texas Republican activist has compared gay people to termites. We are termites. That's a new one. Claiming homosexuality was created by the Soviet Union to destroy America. Stephen Hotz of Conservative Republicans of Texas made the shocking comments at the Sit for Truth Evangelical Conference, which was held over the weekend in Houston. In the speech snipped by Right Wing Watch, he warns, quote, "The homosexual movement has really infiltrated. Think of them like termites. They get into the wood of the house and they eat away at the very moral fabric of the foundation of our country. This is exactly what the Marxist movement was all about. If you remember, Soviet leader Khrushchev came and said, we're going to get your country one way or another, and the way they want to do it is to destroy the moral fabric and create moral anarchy in our country so that our people no longer live righteous lives, but they're living lives that are ungodly. When you do that, you lack moral courage because you can't very well stand up and oppose people doing wicked things if you're participating in the same activities." So again, gay people, termites, and by the way, Russia sent us. All right, back to the national front. 7 local chapters have so far endorsed Donald Trump for president. That would be 7 local chapters of the Log Cabin Republicans. So this is an interesting piece because the Log Cabin Republicans came out last week and said, we are not endorsing Donald Trump. But in that endorsement, and some people covered this as that the Log Cabin Republicans realized their mistake and they were correcting it. And that's not true at all. That's not at all what happened. In their refusal to endorse Donald Trump, they said in their statement, he's probably the most pro-LGBT candidate we've ever had. They might have used even more certain language than that, that he is the most pro-LGBT candidate we have. They said, we're not endorsing him only because he surrounds himself with bad people. So it definitely was not an apology for supporting Donald Trump. Very much the opposite. They do support Donald Trump. And as we are seeing now, 7 local chapters of the Log Cabin Republicans, they have indeed endorsed Donald Trump. Colorado is the latest local chapter confirmed to endorse him. It joins local chapters in right here in Cleveland, Los Angeles, Texas, Georgia, and Orange County, California, even as the national chapter refuses to endorse him. So I don't know. It's kind of a weird, we're not endorsing him, but most of our chapters are. So whatever the heck that means. In other gay Republican news, Peter Thiel, the controversial gay billionaire and Donald Trump supporter, spoke at a National Press Club meeting this week. He denounced an advocate commentary piece and other criticisms of his stances as examples of intolerance on the part of the LGBT people and progressives in general. He said this, quote, "This intolerance has taken on some bizarre forms. The Advocate, a magazine which once praised me as a gay innovator, even published an article," which, by the way, just for the record, it wasn't an article, it was an opinion piece. But anyway, going back to the quote, "even published an article saying that as of now I am, and I quote, not a gay man because I don't agree with their politics. The lie behind the buzzword of diversity could not be made more clear. If you don't conform, then you don't count as diverse, no matter what your personal background." Again, it was a commentary. It was on the Advocate's website. It was by historian Jim Downs. I actually wrote an op-ed for all of the Cleveland newspapers. It was a syndicated op-ed here in Cleveland just about gay Republicans. And by the way, widely misinterpreted by some folks. People who read it got it, but people who read the title, which I didn't write. My original title was Unicorns, Leprechauns, and Gays for Trump. But they changed it to something like Even Gays for Trump Should Have a Voice. Something like that. Gays for Trump may bewilder, but they still have a voice. And my whole point was exactly what I said on last week's episode. We can't be sending death threats to Gays for Trump. It doesn't mean that we support them, but we don't belittle them in the way where we say they have mental illness and we pathologize them. And we certainly don't send them death threats. That's bad. But people who just read the title, I had gay people saying, I can't believe you support the Gays for Trump. I don't. You didn't read the article. You're trying to silence all the people in the LGBTQ community who don't agree with you. Nope, you just read the title. It's amazing how many people decide what it is that you said just by reading the title, which never really bothered me that much, except this is the first time that I've written a syndicated column where I didn't get to determine the title. Now I'm not so into it. I don't like it at all. It's not so cool. All right, how about some international stories for you? Let's look at what's happening all around the world, not just here in the U.S. As Taiwan moves ever closer to becoming Asia's first country to recognize marriage equality, record numbers of people gathered in downtown Taipei last weekend for the region's largest LGBT pride. The celebration of diversity culminated in a historic advance for locals as the LGBT pride flag flew above the island's nation's capital for the first time ever. Now in its 14th year, Taiwan's LGBT Pride celebration drew a reported 80,000 people to the country's political hub last weekend. There was a little bit of light rain, but it did not keep people away. Local drag personality Magnolia Lamanga said this, quote, "It's not huge, the attendance, by Western standards, but there is nothing like it in East Asia. Tokyo and Bangkok can't compare." So a huge record numbers of people there in Taiwan. And there is the possibility coming up that Taiwan might have some marriage equality. They're looking at that in the Taiwanese governmental process there. So we'll keep you posted on that. On the other side of the spectrum, we got to talk about Uganda. It was early in the morning when Jackson Mukasa was awakened by the chants outside his Kampala home in Uganda. The crowd yelled, "The homos are in there." They were banging spoons on metal cooking pots. Oh my, Jackson Mukasa, a 21-year-old gay man living in the Ugandan capital, was terrified. He said this quote, "We opened the door and there were police and people everywhere. The local councilman was there yelling, 'Out with the homos, you are scaring people in the area.' I still have scars from the beatings that followed." So a lot of accounts still coming forward of the various horrible, horrible tactics that the police use in Uganda to quote-unquote prove homosexuality. Painful exams. That's the information that's coming forward. So on the one hand, you have these record numbers of folks in Taiwan who are celebrating Pride for the first time. And then, of course, we must remind you that there in Africa, so many horribly unsafe places to even remotely espouse your sexual orientation there. So that's what's happening in Uganda. International, you got to balance that stuff out. Some good stories, some not great stories. Back to the U.S., let's talk about Mississippi for a second. Let's talk about Mississippi. The governor there in Mississippi is continuing his fight to uphold Mississippi's anti-gay law. The law, we've covered this a million times over, it encourages anti-LGBT discrimination. This Republican governor, he wants a federal court to uphold the law which would allow businesses and those employed by the government to discriminate against same-sex couples. The governor's name is, of course, Phil Bryant. He believes that marriage can only be between a man and a woman. He believes that a person's gender is set at birth and that gay sex is an act against God, and he wants the state to agree with him. Governor Bryant has asked a federal appeals court to introduce the religious objections law, despite the fact that this very law was previously blocked by U.S. District Judge Carlton Reeves. Judge Reeves ruled that the law unconstitutionally establishes preferred beliefs and creates unequal treatment for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. Well, Mississippi's Democratic Attorney General Jim Hood later refused to appeal Reeves' ruling, but that is not stopping Governor Bryant. The appeal that Governor Bryant is putting forth is now being dealt with by private attorneys, including some working for Alliance Defending Freedom, which is an Arizona-based Christian legal group that helped write the measure. The law would have protected businesses who claim to have sincerely, it's that phrase, folks, it's that phrase that comes up over and over again, sincerely held religious beliefs or moral convictions in objection to same-sex marriage. So that is what the governor of Mississippi is spending his time on. It's not on the economy. It's not on school safety. Right? I'm not saying that he's not doing those things too, but he is actually taking time out of his schedule to codify hate into the laws of Mississippi. That's what he is spending his time on. It makes absolutely no sense. My apologies to you all there in the state of Mississippi. And more nationally, Trump supporters, Donald Trump supporters, are using a homophobic automated robocall campaign in Utah to attack the third-party candidate who is surging in the state. Independent Republican candidate Evan McMullen has been making strong gains in his heavily Mormon home state, with Donald Trump potentially facing a loss to independent Republican candidate Evan McMullen. Evan McMullen is the former chief policy director for Republicans in Congress. Ahead of the election coming up in just a few days, a pro-Trump automated call has barraged voters in the state, and it attempts to dissuade them from voting for McMullen by branding him a, quote, closet homosexual. The call, reported by the Daily Beast, states this, quote, "Evan is over 40 years old and is not married and doesn't even have a girlfriend. I believe Evan is a closet homosexual. Evan has two mommies. His mother is a lesbian married to another woman. Evan is okay with that. Indeed, Evan supports the Supreme Court ruling legalizing gay marriage. Don't vote for Evan McMullen. Vote for Donald Trump. He will respect all women." I can barely say that with a straight face. "He will respect all women and be a president we can all be proud of." So there you go. It's not the fact that there is this robocall, right? Like, that's horrible and so ridiculous. It's the fact that there exists research somewhere that if we put out a robocall alleging that a candidate is a closet homosexual, that that might sway some voters. That's the real problem here. It wouldn't be a problem if there was this robocall and everyone believed, well, that's the dumbest thing ever. That's not going to help Donald Trump at all. But the fact is that there are individuals who believe, no, this is going to help Donald Trump. If we call around to people there in the great state of Utah and we not even suggest, if we just say that this other candidate is a closet homosexual, then people will not vote for him. Right? That's an actual tactic. And I guess even scarier than employing that tactic is the fact that maybe indeed it will work for some voters. I do not know. I do not know. That is our national news roundup and some international news there as well. By the way, always, always, if you guys have any guest ideas, send them on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. That's ken@thisshowisogay.com. Certainly, if you have any feedback, anything you want to talk about, any stories you want us to cover, and if you have any guest ideas, ken@thisshowisogay.com. Our huge, huge thanks to Shannon Algio. He's doing such things with positivity and light. We love that. We love that. We knew that many of you had not heard of Shannon, and that's what we love doing here. We love focusing on the folks that you have heard of. We love our Carney Wilsons and our Jim J. Bullocks and our Indigo Girls and our Judy Shepherds, but we also love people who are using their voice to make a difference in their own unique way. I find that's what's inspiring. That's what keeps me doing this show, because I get to talk to these cool people like Shannon Algio, who is using his voice in his own unique way to make a difference. Love it. Check out everything that he's doing. I will just do a bit of a teaser. We have a huge, huge announcement on next week's show. I can't tell you more than that. I can't tell you more than that, but it's a huge announcement. It's really, really exciting for me. If you follow me on Facebook, and you can just find me there, Ken Schneck, or if you follow This Show Is So Gay on Facebook, you'll probably see it before then, but I'm just saying, big announcement next week, and I'm so excited to tell you guys about it. In the interim, there will be an election. Between now and next week's episode, there's going to be an election. Whatever it is that you do to support your candidate, I urge you to get out there and vote. That's how we make our voices heard. So at the very least, you must get out there and vote. Everybody go vote this coming Tuesday, and we will bring to you the results of that election and what it means for the LGBTQ community, at least the cursory glance. We will see what happens. That's on next week's show alongside my own personal huge announcement. So excited to tell you. You guys get out there. Go vote. Go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, for all of our allies out there. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay? What I hope for at last would be mine. If I could reach higher, just for one moment touch the sky. From that one moment in my life, I'm gonna be I'll go.